going to talk about a tiny, tiny little project that has changed our approach to engagement in Norfolk. It's not new, but it's new to us, so I'm going to talk about that. So Norfolk Libraries went on a journey with the Carnegie Trust in 2018, and we were fortunate enough to be accepted onto something called the Not Without Me Accelerator Programme. And along with five other organisations from the UK and Ireland, and we were the only library service on the accelerator. And so this is how we used art to shape the content of a digital learning programme, and we used Worley-style art on ceramics. For the uninitiated, Worley is a folk art from the Gujarat region of Western India that tells a story about religion and everyday life. And Not Without Me is a programme that identified that not all young people are digital natives. Those who are vulnerable, particularly those at points of transition in their lives, for example, young people in care or excluded from school or mainstream education, are really at risk of slipping through the net and falling out of the digital mainstream. And the results of this are inequality of opportunity and a deepening digital divide. So the accelerator was a development opportunity that offered us a six-month programme of training and support, plus £3,000 to do something to prepare to bid for a bigger grant at the end of it. And we had a couple of Norfolk staff who participated in all kinds of activities, but really developed the theory of change model that we've been able to adapt and use in our service. So our project was about supporting vulnerable young people in care and care leavers to develop safer social networking skills. And it resulted in a different way of delivering that. And we needed to consult with young people. We've always consulted with young people, so we thought. We've asked our teams to talk to young people to help shape our work. But we've never been very good at it, and it's never actually produced anything that is anything that we wanted to go further with. Finding and engaging with an audience and getting honest thoughts and feedbacks from them has always been difficult, and many attempts at listening have been tokenistic, and this means that many of our activities have been, you know, a bit mumsy and, you know, we know best and that kind of thing, and especially when we're talking about keeping safe online. We thought we knew best. Anyway, so to improve our listening skills and engagement skills, we changed our approach, and we used Worley and with a group of people that we found from children's services in the virtual school to say that rather than having a simple conversation about, you know, how do you behave online, they drew it basically using these plates and the ceramic thing using Worley, and these little drawings tell us and tell them what, you know, their complex online lives using social media. So we delivered the sessions, and by concentrating on the artwork, we observed that young people were able to talk much more honestly about their complex online behaviour, to talk about their concerns and the risky and inappropriate situations that they found themselves in, not only online but also in real life. And we were able to gain honest feedback from young people on the type of information and skill sharing that they wanted to that they would find most useful in a learning programme, and how they would how they wanted to be shown how to do things better online, and how they would be better able to successfully and critically negotiate online spaces. So the resulting programme was something completely different to what we set out that we thought that we'd be delivering. And what we delivered was a programme that was better tailored to young people's needs. We were able to customise our activities to address the issues identified in the Worley drawings, and we were able to be quite non-judgmental and practical in that. Sadly, we didn't get the grant opportunity at the end of the process, but we have mainstreamed this as a way of engaging with young people. Thank you.
Thank you, and you kept your time, well done. Next up we have Anthony Hopkins, who's Head of Library, Heritage and Adult Education Services for the London Borough of Merton, and he's going to be talking about how they've engaged with the community in the design of one of their new libraries.
Okay, good morning. So I'm going to talk through the consultation and design work that we and how we got the community involved in the new Colliers-Wood Library, and hopefully what I'm speaking about will resonate in practical terms with some of the discussions about place at this conference. So Colliers-Wood Library is situated on the outskirts of South London, and it's a large commuter base for people working in London. But it isn't fully the picture around this as well. There are a lot of young professionals, but there are also pockets of deprivation. And the building landscape didn't always fully fulfil the area's ambitions. And this is the one example, case in point, voted the UK's most ugliest building and a contender for demolition. Unfortunately, sitting over the northern tube lines didn't achieve that. And this is the old library as it was, so lovely if you ever got in there. But obviously, two-thirds vacant. And not really quite the presentation picture that we wanted to build up. So over the course of a number of years, we went through lots and lots of different plans and ideas and designs around the library. And within that time, we really found the importance of building up your partnerships and developing your partnerships to really make the library fulfil the ambitions for the local community. So we didn't own the building, so we worked with a local developer, and through an excellent partnership, worked with them, where we really fulfilled the ambitions around what they wanted and what we wanted, and really kind of produced the best quality offer that we wanted. And we really worked with our regeneration colleagues around the Colliers-Wood Town Centre Master Plan. So consultation was a big element, and we really wanted to focus this around three kind of key areas. So we wanted people to be involved in every stage of the design and build of this. So we used different formats, from online to focus groups to face-to-face, making sure that we engaged with all residents, so users and non-users. And there was three stages where we used these different methods through it. So the first phase was around the external design. So this is actually about how it's impacting on the local area. What's the size of the building? You know, how many flats? What, factoring things around affordable? What's the design and layout principles that we then wanted to build into the internal design of the library? And then we went on to the internal design of the library and started thinking about the different factors and elements within there. And that's when the first elements come up around making the library particularly dementia-friendly. So the library is now dementia-friendly, and just a little bit about what dementia-friendly means. So one in every four people in the UK over the age of 65 are living with dementia. That's about 850,000 people. And we would all probably know someone living with dementia. Dementia-friendly environments are actually in many ways quite simple. It's actually about creating the right environment and having staff and volunteers appropriately trained to identify people living with dementia and to be able to give the right support there. So we formed it as part of a key part of our Dementia Action Alliance and then filled that into the internal design elements. And particularly this was about the actual colours, the textures, the signage and things like that within the library, what kind of elements were within that. And then the final consultation phase was about the furniture. And within this, we brought in a range of suppliers and brought the residents in to actually test and kind of test phase what they wanted so that we could build that into the specification for the furniture equipment and purchase it on that basis. And in terms of outcomes, so visitor figures have increased by 244%, and we have with the library can deliver a much more broader range of activities and events within it. Stock issues have increased by 192%, and particularly within that, the stock is a lot more representative. Through the feedback, we've got a lot of really good information and developed new collections, such as our dementia collection. And customer feedback has been really good as well. And you see some of the examples on the screen about that. And we've been rewarded and recognised for the work that we've done and are continuing to develop the library at the moment about making the library more friendly for SENS, children and young people, and improving the local offer for this important client base. And one element within that in particular is a recent Arts Council funded project that we've started called Project SENS. And the library was part of a library regeneration plan for the area, which has maximised investment from all sources, including the GLA and SILBIDs. So we have a brand new £2 million library at no expense to the taxpayer. And our negotiations and pursuit of our achieving the objectives around housing and development means that the building is 75% affordable. And as I said, this was part of a big master plan. So that is the beloved tower as it now looks. Much, much improved, and I think a real good example of where, you know, libraries working with regeneration colleagues, with private developers, with partners to really make something transformational for the local community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I thought I spoke fast, but that was So library takeovers is the subject of our next speaker. So this is David Hayden, who's Service Manager for Development in Somerset Libraries. Your time starts.
Hi. So library takeovers was our Engaging Libraries project. So Engaging Libraries was broadly aimed to use libraries to engage with their local communities on a health topic using innovative and creative means. And this aligned perfectly with what we were trying to achieve, some of the outcomes for Somerset Libraries around kind of health, stronger communities, and nurturing creativity. So the library takeover as a project was to engage with young people with learning disabilities. And as a project, it kind of articulated our belief in libraries as community spaces. It provided a fantastic opportunity for collaboration and enabled us to explore what it means to not just be accessible, but to be inclusive. Cool. 15 seconds is a long time.
I'll get you back to where we should be. We're in Friday, part one. Where were we, David? Which slide do you want?
So we had two aims from our project. One was to engage our whole community in talking and thinking about learning disabilities, and one was to work with people with learning disabilities to discover how our libraries and other public spaces could be improved to be more inclusive. So there were four stages to our engagement process. First one was library takeover days, which was volunteering opportunities within libraries, creative workshops for participants to reflect on their experiences, and then a public exhibition using the art that had come out of those creative workshops. And alongside that, there was a short documentary film. So stage one was the library takeover days, which were the volunteering opportunities. So these worked in a similar way to work experience. Participants were consulted in advance on the kind of activities that they wanted to do. And there was a range of activity that people took part in, a range from processing book returns, to creating displays, to supporting delivery of the rhyme time sessions. These are just some photos of some of the participants and some feedback. Just let you take that in. So we recruited two artists to facilitate the workshops. One artist worked with a group in one library, the other artist worked with a group in another library. It's not. I didn't want that to play, but it's fine. the artists had the freedom to take the workshops in whatever direction they intended. There were challenges in some instances. It was quite difficult for self-reflection for some of the participants because of their nature of their learning disabilities. But the kind of overriding sense from the workshops was a real sense of fun and engagement with the process, and some good stuff came out of it. So I'll just let you. The workshops themselves then ended up with a public exhibition. Yeah, can you just move to the next one? So the common things that came out of the workshop. So colour was the strong theme that came out of the workshops. Participants really keen on the sense of colour, strong colour. And the primary focus, which collective response was difficult, so there were individual responses from the participants. Alongside that, we did a short documentary film. So we worked with Somerset Film, who are a local charity, and they taught some of the participants how to use the equipment, do some of the filming, and this gave us a really different way of engaging some participants who weren't that keen on engaging with the art aspect of it. The short film is on YouTube, so if you after this, if you look up Somerset Library Takeovers and have a look at the short film, it'll give you a deeper insight into the project. The results of the thing, colour was very popular, more colour, more welcoming, gave us this real opportunity to see our lives with new eyes from a completely fresh perspective. Current signage was unhelpful, it's not always easy to understand, images would be more helpful. Challenges were around staff engagement, there was a real reluctance initially from staff to kind of engage with the project, but once they got to meet and work with the participants, they became much more on board, and then some of the staff where we had the biggest challenges are now advocates for the project. These slides are moving quite fast now, but there was a lot of learning, volunteering opportunities. We're going to go on to offer volunteering opportunities to people with learning disabilities on an ongoing basis. And we talked a lot about stories yesterday. So this is just some of the feedback from the participants and from the staff who engaged in the project. So that was a bit of a rambling whistle-stop tour of that. But there is a YouTube video. There's also a report. So if you have any questions, please do get in touch and I'll circulate some of that information for you.
Thank you for that. And we didn't deliberately do that as a curveball to put off the southern speaker. But next up is Bruce Lee, and I'm looking forward to this because he's going to tell us about how to successfully engage with friends groups.
I'm going to try. Yeah.
You're going
to
try. Okay.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really hoping my jam as well is giving me a bit extra time. So at Suffolk Libraries, we're committed, like all of us are, to making life better for our customers, staff, and volunteers. And our friends groups play a key role in helping us meet local need across all of our 44 libraries. So what I'm here to talk about today is how we've built some really, really, really strong relationships with those friends groups, and basically how we've worked with them to develop a vision that we share together as we move forward. So the first thing I'd like to say is that we truly value volunteering at Suffolk Library. It's not a replacement for our paid staff at all. and we value what volunteers bring to our organisation, whether they're a friends group volunteer, a summer reading challenge volunteer, a home library service volunteer, or just another type of volunteer, and we have many other types of volunteer. But we appreciate that every volunteer is different, and we've worked really, really hard to understand what makes our volunteers tick, and particularly how to motivate and engage them. Because essentially, like all of us being passionate about libraries, they're really, really passionate about volunteering. And we understand that passion and have found different ways to make them feel part of a county-wide organisation, and as a result, retain their energy and commitment. So how have we harnessed that passion and translated it into something that benefits the wider community and helps us deliver services that specifically meet some very key local needs? The very simple first step was to ensure that each group and each individual within that group feels truly valued, and particularly for the contribution they make, whether that be to their local library or the wider organisation. And that's really challenging and sometimes quite labour intensive, to make sure that we engage those people in a way that they feel that we appreciate what they do. And so how have we enabled those geographically dispersed volunteers to feel part of something much bigger, and feel appreciated for those individual contributions? So I'm going to talk about some of the specifics now, because I've realised I've asked myself a lot of questions there. First, we needed to work out what role each volunteer fulfilled, and that wasn't easy as well, because often we didn't have a record of what they were doing for us. And so that was, again, quite a labour-intensive process, and not an easy task. We have 1,000 active volunteers, and probably in total 3,000 who come and go. And engaging them individually in groups is a challenge across quite a significant sort of rural geography. And we've developed several different ways for them to have a voice in the organisation, which is a really key part of our engagement strategy, and has enabled us to go on a really good journey. And more boringly, collecting data about them was one of the first key steps. We've now got a big volunteer database, and just having some simple contact details and understanding of what the role the individual plays allows us to communicate with them in an appropriate and timely way. We also work really hard to create a dialogue. We have a regular newsletter that we send out to our volunteers. We have regular volunteer forums. We have drop-in sessions. And just recently, we run 44 different roadshows across the county to tell them about our new strategy, as one example of how we go about that. The idea of the forums is to listen, again, and ensure that our volunteers feel involved but able to contribute to our developing agenda as an organisation. And that allows us to understand them and, again, throw back at them the fact that we really value them. And it's been really, really important to involve them in that agenda. I can't stress that enough, because having a them and us really isn't the way to go as far as we're concerned with volunteers. And we've tried really, really hard to avoid that. I'm getting ahead of myself now. Gosh, I didn't think that would happen. So, like I said, I can't stress enough how getting them involved in the bigger picture, making them a part of the decisions where you can, and giving them the opportunity to really, really contribute to something that meets those specific local needs that I mentioned earlier, but also something that meets their needs in terms of being motivated individually as a volunteer. And a lot of that is about empowerment and giving local staff the opportunity to empower those volunteers, and that in turn turns into trust and hopefully mutual respect. And I say all of this, but I wasn't there at the start of our journey with our friends groups, and it was really challenging at the start. So it has been a long-term process, and it's taken us probably 6.5 years to get to where we are now. And I think the fundamental thing that's underlined all of this through those tough times is having the conversation. And I can't stress enough that if anything, you need to over-communicate. You know, and at times we still forget to get those key messages across to people and make sure that they understand what we're trying to do and how we want to work with them to do it. And we need to keep going as we move forward to continue to do that. And face-to-face is labour-intensive, but it is the best way to do it. Finally, we take every opportunity to thank our volunteers. And a simple thank you goes a long way, generally, just a verbal thank you. But we do lots of other things to thank them as well. And we also love a good celebration. So we now have our People's Champions Awards, as we call them, which are an opportunity for our volunteers to come together on one night. And we thank them for the great job they do for us very publicly, and share the love. So we've got a journey that will continue down. We've got a lot to learn still, but that's just a few small insights into our journey. So thank you.
So last but not least, we have Sam Elliott, who's Crescent and Collections Manager from Bolton Library Museum Service. Means nothing. To talk about their Hawke Street projects.
Hello everyone. So I'm Sam Elliott, not Samantha, and I work at Bolton Library Museum Service. And my background is really in museums, but I'm picking up a lot more library work now, which is really exciting. So this is Bolton Library Museum. This is our central library museum, and we're a fully merged service, so we are libraries, museums, archives, and an aquarium. And so we're working on this really great project. Did anybody hear about Kick the Dust, which is a national National Lottery Heritage Fund project? And it's a 5-year project, which is amazing. We're working with young people for 5 years, and it was a £10 million project. In the Northwest has got £1 million. And the idea is that we work with young people so that they truly become part of our organisation. And when I say truly, it really is truly. It's not just a standalone project. So these are the other museums involved. But the reason why I've come to talk about it here is because our project started with archives and local studies, which is where all projects should start, really. And so what we've started with is we've worked with a small group of young people to begin with, because this is a five-year project and it will get bigger. But we started with this idea of Hope Street, and we found the Hope Streets in our local area. And we worked with young people just so they could delve into the archives to look at Hope Street, who lived there, how we could relate it to Hope. They did the usual, they did some AV stuff and some filming and so on, and it really was just a get-to-know-you session. They went up this local hill, they went on a journey together, they started exploring this idea of hope, because that's what the project's about in the future. It's about hope for young people, what their hopes and dreams are, what their hopes for our organisation are, and how they truly become part of our organisation. So we've kind of got to the end of year one, and like I said, this is a five-year project, and so it's really good that we can embed this over the 5 years. And it is, we're going to start widening out who these groups are, and so we're working with a youth group, in the traditional sense, a youth club. We're working with the Proud Trust, which is a continuation of a project that we've already worked on, which is kind of looking at how we involve LGBTQ communities. And then we're also working with a group who support young people with learning disabilities too. And so they're going to become our core producers, because the next year of the project and onwards is that these people are going to be given £30,000 to create their own festival in Bolton. And so we are truly handing this over. There are some complexities where, you know, we're going to have to do the spending, but they are absolutely going to tell us what to do. And so they're going to create this Hope Festival. We don't know what it's going to look like, so I can't tell you about that. But it could be a day, it could be a weekend, it could be online, it could be a circus. We've got absolutely no idea what this festival is going to look like, but we're really excited about it, because what we hope, the festival is one thing, but what we actually hope is how over the next 5 years can these people become part of our management teams, our service development groups, truly, truly, how can they become involved? And I haven't got the answer, and I don't know, but I think if you've got 5 years and £1 million, you're going to get a little bit further towards that answer. And I think that's the investment you need. What I do need to talk about is Hope Happenings. So this first year, what we did with these young people, we sent them up the hill, but then we also brought them back down again. We got them working with this group called Frog and Bone, and they took over the town centre, basically, with a little mini festival. So they worked with this company to try and help them. And I couldn't really describe what it is, because it's puppets, it's a bit of music, it's arts and culture, really. But it was just about doing something different in the town centre and getting people involved. And it worked really well. So, and this is, I think this is Carmen, maybe, actually. So we're learning from each other, all these different museums. But it's really important for us in Bolton, because we are a merged service, and we do really struggle to get young people in that central building. So even though it's a town centre, they might come for short periods of time while they're studying, but they don't really spend leisure time in our spaces. And so we've got to figure it out, because there are future audiences. Have I gone over 5 minutes because it went a bit wrong? I might just carry on, okay? So we're really excited about it. It's something truly different for us. We're going to have loads of issues, because the staff will not like it. Some will and some won't. We're going to have loads of issues. But we're just going to have to figure them out together, really, because it's something that we've got to do. We're working with these other partners, Blaze, who do put on young people's festivals. You might have heard of them. They're based in Preston. And the idea is that young people harness the energy, and we harness the energy and insight of young people to provide hope for the future of cultural activity. So that's kind of the vision statement for the whole of the project. And I think it's something we should do, and we really will truly put young people at the heart of cultural services. Thank you very much.
to a professional.